Welcome to the podcast where heavy industrial industries meet the venture capital ecosystem, interviewing both thought-leading investors and pioneering founders to better understand the opportunities and challenges that lie ahead for digital industrial innovation. Your host is Ty Finley, and this is the Heavy Hitters Podcast.
Mike Zayuns joins us today from San Francisco. Mike is the founding partner of Plug and Play Supply Chain, where he's both investing and running Plug and Play's global supply chain and logistics innovation programs. He first joined Plug and Play in 2015 and has experience working within their various accelerator programs across sports, media, entertainment, and insurance before launching the supply chain program in 2017, which now has a presence in Silicon Valley, Toronto, Bentonville, Savannah, Antwerp, and Hamburg. Key investments for Plug and Play include Einride, Shippo, Rabi, amongst numerous other supply chain innovators that have gone through their innovation programs and batches. Mike, really excited to have you on, talk about where in the world this global supply chain is going. So welcome to Heavy Hitters.
Thanks, Ty. Pleasure to be on. Really excited about it and big fan of your podcast.
Awesome. Well, we always start with backgrounds here, so I gave a little snapshot, but give us a little more color and commentary into what led you launching and founding the Plug and Play Supply Chain Program.
Yeah, so my background was really, prior to Plug and Play, I was an entrepreneur. Then I joined Plug and Play back in 2015, and I got to grow a lot within the company. Back when I started, Plug and Play was more of a smaller family office. We had about 20 people. Today, Plug and Play has about 600 people globally, so I've seen a ton of growth and expansion within the company. And I was able to work within a variety of different programs, working with corporate partners, like in the media sector, the insurance industry, and various other programs Plug and Play was launching. And after 2 years of doing that, I realized that one of the sectors Plug and Play was not active in was supply chain and logistics. And there was a lot of opportunity for digital transformation, digitizing the end-to-end supply chain. So after kind of talking to our CEO of Plug and Play, Saeed Amidi, I pitched that there's a great opportunity to build a program around supply chain logistics. At the time, we saw companies like Flexport raise a lot of funding. So we saw a lot of traction in the venture capital market. And I was able to get our first corporate partner, which was Maersk. So I was able to kind of co-design this program with Maersk and their team to really look at the end-to-end logistics and supply chain, building an acceleration program for logistics and supply chains. So it was really cool to sit down with them and kind of map out this program, which we've continued to grow and expand today.
Right on. Well, we're certainly going to dig in a little bit more about what those trends were that you clearly saw ahead of the curve here in just a sec, but maybe just setting the stage for the discussion for our listeners. Can you tell us a little bit more about the history of Plug and Play overall? The supply chain program you launched, and then its specific, you have a dual accelerator and investment strategy. So we'd love to just set the stage about Plug and Play for us.
Yeah, sounds great. So Plug and Play essentially is a family-owned family office. We were founded by Saeed Amidi, who's a serial entrepreneur. He initially moved from Iran after the 1979 Iranian Revolution, and he was from a very wealthy family there, and he wanted to become an entrepreneur to get back into many different businesses that he was in Iran. And then he has now said he started about 17 different businesses. Most of them are very traditional businesses. Like, he owns a chemical company that distributes chemicals on behalf of ExxonMobil. He owns a water cooler company that has 2,000 employees in Spain and Austria called Aqua Service. And then he started buying, and his family lived in Silicon Valley, just a stone's throw away from Stanford. They had a building, 165 University Avenue, which was very famous in Silicon Valley at the time because it was actually the first office space for Google, Logitech, PayPal, and Danger. So by owning that building and watching these amazing tech companies grow from within that building, he realized that, why am I just renting office space to startups? Why can't I actually invest and play a deeper role within their journey? So he actually ended up being one of the first investors in PayPal. As you know, it was acquired by eBay for $1.5 billion. And after that kind of success early on, he became hooked on investing in different companies. And then Plug and Play ended up buying a building in 2006, which was the Philips Semiconductor headquarters in Silicon Valley, which is a 180,000 square foot building. And Saeed's vision was just to fill it up full of startups. So prior to COVID and everything kind of going more remote, we always would have at least 400 startups in our building at any given time. It's starting to pick up again, but starting in 2013, we started to get approached, or Plug and Play was approached by a lot of large corporations that were trying to figure out how Plug and Play was investing early stage into startups and how they could tap in to figure out which startups were emerging and becoming great opportunities in the market. So Plug and Play was able to build different programs around retail, where we partnered with companies like Kohl's, Procter & Gamble, Target, for example, and then really build kind of a holistic group of partners that can actually work with technologies and test them and pilot them with their different business units. So we've been able to build these kind of industry-focused programs and now scale that to about 15 different industries. And then that's where I was able to, after seeing that done in fintech, insurtech, healthcare, and a variety of other industries, that's when I realized that supply chain and logistics was one of the missing pieces that Plug and Play was crazy not to have a dedicated program. It's one of the largest markets in the world, and it's also one of the biggest opportunities for transformation, and especially as can be seen nowadays, it's a very hot sector for venture capital investment. So really happy with the decision to have, after 2 years of Plug and Play, to dedicate everything to build the supply chain and logistics practice.
Yeah. It's really impressive to the coverage and how fast you guys have grown to have 15 different industries covered, over 600 employees now, as you mentioned earlier. It's really impressive. And maybe just for anyone that doesn't understand the accelerator model, how do you guys usually put people through batches? Just give us the quick synopsis on that structure.
Yeah, definitely. So Plug and Play is almost like a grandfather in the acceleration program. We've been doing this for a long time, and we're constantly iterating and trying to improve our model. One thing we've realized is it's best to be very founder friendly. So we don't charge startups anything. We don't charge them equity. We don't charge them fees. We're really just there to support them. So we started, and now, and even more so going into the future, we get a lot of amazing entrepreneurs. And our goal is to attract world-class entrepreneurs so they can really work with the largest corporations in the world, who are often the ones sponsoring and working with Plug and Play. So our real goal is just to be able to be that connector and matchmaker between the large corporates and the startups. We obviously benefit from that, because if a startup is really performing well or getting traction from like Walmart or Exxon or whoever, that's a large corporate partner of ours, it makes it a lot easier for us to make an investment decision that we want to help support this startup, not just from a support standpoint, but actually invest capital into them as well. So it's a model that's worked for everyone. We really benefit as an investor, but our corporate partners benefit because they get access to great startups that we're able to bring them in for our specific programs. And the programs are stage agnostic. So we have very early stage founders where they're able to essentially get a lot of the benefits from the mentors. They really need to figure out maybe product market fit. So we see it kind of almost like a university, whereas you don't have to show up to class at university. You can just go to maybe the exam at the end and pass it if you're a really great student, for example. Or you can be the dedicated student that comes in every day. So that's kind of how we do our programs, because we have such a diverse group of startups that come in. Like, for example, Project 44 came into one of our batches a few years ago as a growth stage company. And their goal is really just to tackle these large enterprise accounts. So because we're working with companies like Yamato and Walmart, which are some of the companies that we actually helped connect Project 44 to, they were able to get a ton of value just by connecting to these large corporates, whereas they didn't want to get as much mentorship, for example. Whereas a very early stage pre-seed level company, they really need a lot more support generally, or they want to work with someone like one of the amazing mentors we have that has industry experience or sold a startup previously. And we're able to kind of build this model to bring everyone together. It's a 3-month program where we're able to connect the startups to these different opportunities to engage with our corporate partners, investors, but also the mentors, I think, are especially important for the more early stage founders as they're kind of building product market fit.
Absolutely. And having had multiple portfolio companies go through the program now, you guys are great connectors and are curating that value to each stage of what the life cycle of that company's in. And we'll come back to this actually as well. But I do want to start where we were kind of hinting at. It's beyond obvious now. I think if you're reading in the Daily Wall Street Journal, you can't not see a supply chain related issue popping up. So let's dig a little bit deeper into, how in the world did you and Plug and Play all the way back in 2017 see this market opportunity forming? And obviously Flexport's one part of that story, but really to build a specialist brand that was solely focused on supply chain innovators, what I would say long before it really gotten into this, call it present day debacle everyone's watching. So what were those trends and indicators that signaled the timing was right way back in 2017?
Yeah, for me, like growing up inside a Plug and Play, I kind of felt like a startup myself, whereas I saw this is a new market that Plug and Play wasn't really active in. And I got to see a lot of our corporate partners from other industries, like in the travel industry, we started working with Lufthansa, but then they started sending Lufthansa cargo over to look at how they can track, for example, within their warehouses or do kind of drone inspections, for example. So I started to see that a lot, just working across different programs at Plug and Play, that logistics and supply chain was a big trend and something that continued to get more and more important for a lot of our corporate partners, especially the larger corporate partners they are. Like, for example, if you're Walmart or ExxonMobil, you're going to have more supply chain problems than a smaller company. So I started to see these massive corporations really focusing and looking at and supply chain, but then a lot of it was luck, just kind of landing Maersk as an kind of an anchor partner to build that first kind of program with, and then seeing other support from other companies like Exxon and Ericsson, for example, as some of our first partners. And then we ended up signing up Union Pacific, and we ended up getting every mode of transportation across the logistics supply chain and leaders across those different sectors. And then more and more kind of corporate partners kept joining, and we ended up getting the largest shippers, carriers, and players across the whole market. So definitely luck, but then it was definitely kind of seeing that market opportunity and just seeing the demand in the market. I think that's what really drove me to become so passionate about supply chain. And yeah, it's crazy how much it's growing and progressing every single year. We're now working, you mentioned like some of the backlogs in the ports, for example, like we're working with, we're about to announce a big partnership with Port of Savannah. We also are doing a lot of work with the Port of Antwerp, the Port of Hamburg, and the Port of Singapore, for example. So it's really cool to kind of be at the forefront of a lot of this technology, which is so important for the whole supply chain market.
Yeah, well, I think it's really interesting that you were able to see across these different corporate partners. It's funny, sometimes we use the word supply chain. It's kind of a cover-all that a lot of people define however they want. But there's a supply chain underneath every single corporation out there. And so that's very interesting. You were able to see some signals even from groups that aren't, call it your 3PLs or your logistics-oriented groups. So I'm sure you guys had a front row seat to seeing where things were headed. And maybe aligned to all those corporate partners, you touched on a little bit earlier, but another area I'd like to dig in, behind all of your accelerator programs is a really large corporate network, really amazing, the network you guys have built that's curated and aligned to each of the various sectors and focuses you have. When it comes to really building out this, let's call it a win-win-win model between Plug and Play, the corporates, and the startups, tell us a little bit more about how you make sure you frame in that there is a value proposition for each of those different constituents when you are making these connections between groups.
Yeah, definitely. So I think the value for Plug and Play is inherent, but I can focus on the others. We're Plug and Play, obviously, we're getting a ton of value as an investor and just that front row seat to seeing what's happening on both sides. I think that's so important. And it's also great for us to get kind of trust within the market and goodwill, whereas when we're able to help a great entrepreneur connect to a leading company, then whether it's we invest in this company or their next company, they're going to remember the support Plug and Play provided, and we'll be able to hopefully get into their upcoming investment round and really build that kind of strong relationship with both sides. But I think where we provide value, I'll start with corporate partners, is that on the corporate partner side, that these are very large incumbents generally, where markets, as you know, are changing, they're being disrupted. The need for technology and automation, for example, is becoming increasingly important. And the lifespan of a corporation is also decreasing as well, where is these new kind of startups are coming out and they are having a bigger impact. And they're also able to have an ROI, for example, or a cost savings, especially in supply chain, where you're able to integrate, for example, a robot within one of your DCs, or you're able to have some automation platform for making deliveries or providing visibility. All those things are becoming increasingly important. And the benefit of a startup is that they are more agile, they can adapt more quickly, and oftentimes can provide a solution that can scale most effectively across the market. So it's becoming a necessity for all the corporate partners or large corporations, essentially, to know what's happening in the startup market. There's a million examples you can think of, like whether it's the taxi companies not realizing what's happening and then Uber coming in and disrupting the market. There's definitely a lot of opportunities for disruption in supply chain, but also areas where there can be incremental value as well. So our goal is just to provide exposure to the startups, plug and play, I think. And we've had I've seen a lot of our corporate partners also on your podcast, for example, like Ryder and Prologis, for example. And they're able to essentially come in and test a lot of the startups, and plug and play is a really good source for deal flow, but also just connecting them to startups worldwide. And we have a lot of examples of that. Like, and then on the startup side, like I'll just take an example of a plug and play portfolio company that essentially we were able to bring from Croatia, which was kind of a random company called Gideon Brothers that we actually invested in quite early in the seed round. We brought them into Arkansas, which the guys never even got to experience the United States before. So they thought Bentonville, Arkansas was kind of, this is America. And there's a lot of different parts of America, but Bentonville, Arkansas is a great place. We're very proud to be there. And they were able to get a ton of traction in Bentonville. So they actually were able to get an investment led by Koch Industries, which was connected through Georgia Pacific, which is an active plug and play partner, which led their $31 million or so round. And then they also got large connections to a lot of the large companies like Walmart or J.B. Hunt and Tyson. So that's just an example of a startup that can get both an investment, but also major opportunities as to work with the customers that we have in our network. So I think that's an example of, and I have countless examples of a startup who's kind of improved their pitch or found product market fit just by discussing with the large corporates that we have. So across all stages, I think the value for the startups, I think, is a no-brainer, whereas we're really not charging them anything. We're just not taking equity like other accelerator programs I know do, and really just trying to help all the startups. And we do end up investing in a handful of the startups in each of the batches, but that's something also unique, is that we're also just supporting a lot of startups that we also don't have equity in as well.
Well, I think it's indicative too that you guys are so deep in this. When you put a location or a program in Bentonville, all of us logistics nerds, right? You got Walmart there, you got J.B. Hunt, you got Tyson in Arkansas. And so you're not only introducing them to customers, you're putting them in their ecosystem, right? You guys have perfected the model of really this corporate meets startup engagement, and obviously plug and play, you know, you benefit from the value of it as well. So just a hats off to you guys, because you are a big part of this ecosystem as it's been built over the last few years. So wanted to give a shout out.
If you have an amazing solution generally, and you can just have the right solution for our corporate partners, that's something that plug and play likes to provide value to our corporates. And like, let's say they want to find the best visibility platform, for example, then we could take like Four Kites or Project 44. There's a lot of other players out there that we could recommend to them to actually look at and test. And as a leading innovation program, essentially what we'll do is just share the companies that they could work with. And then they're able to kind of handpick and select the companies that they actually want to meet and figure out if they have that relationship with. So when we schedule deal flows for our corporate partners, we do 30-minute sessions generally, where they're able to meet like four startups back to back, and they're able to kind of benchmark these startups next to each other. So it's really cool for a lot of these major players to see maybe some competitors from the startup side kind of meeting with these large players, and then they're able to kind of select the ones they want. But definitely agree that relationships are extremely important in this industry. And that's something that we try and promote as well, and why we host a lot of kind of in-person events. We have our selection days to choose the program, always in person for our select group of anchor partners. And then we have like these big kind of demo day slash expo events at the graduation of each of our programs. So these are really good opportunities to build those relationships. And then we're always sort of trying to schedule kind of meetings in addition to that as well, to kind of combine the relationship side, but also we don't want to waste our corporate partners' time. That's the most valuable thing that they have. So if we can save them time by just helping them connect to startups that are already getting traction in the area that they want to find, that tends to be very valuable for them.
Yeah, tons of relationships and value clearly being built there, no doubt. Maybe pushing us forward here, you know, with programs ranging from San Francisco to Arkansas to Hamburg, you truly do have a global supply chain mandate that really does give you an outlook and exposure end to end where this global supply chain innovation discussion is going. So it's somewhat of a section I like to call what's hot and what's hype. Any outlooks from you that you could share with in the audience here of current trends and themes you're seeing on both sides of that equation?
Yeah, well, I think that a lot of the whole market for logistics and supply chain is kind of hot and hype at the time. I mean, it's been the valuations we're seeing of a lot of startups, and I'm sure you see this as well, Ty, has been definitely a lot crazier than it has been in the past. However, we definitely see this as kind of a pivotal point in the industry where there's a lot of these startups that are really starting to emerge as market winners. And we're seeing a lot of more need than ever for automation, for example, in the supply chain, for computer vision applications, for example, or even like robotics inside of a warehouse, just given the shortage of like truck drivers, for example, or kind of blue collar workers. There's definitely a huge need for either automation or helping kind of these roles with different technologies. I think one of the trends that I'm seeing, and we're very proud of one of our portfolio companies that we've also brought to Arkansas from Europe, is a company called Einride that we were an early investor into. They raised a very large round previously at 110 million. They're supposed to raise 50, but ended up raising 110 at their Series B, which we also participated in through pro rata. But we're really excited about like autonomous and electric vehicles. I think that's an extremely hot kind of area. Like if you look at like some of the IPOs, like TuSimple, for example, and their market cap, or even like some others, like you look at like Rivian, for example, I mean, there's so many crazy things happening, especially I think when it comes to the importance of sustainability in the supply chain, I think over the last year or so, I think that's an area that we've become increasingly excited about and has become a major trend that we think is going to stick.
Yeah. Didn't Einride guys just open like an operational headquarter down here in our area in Austin, Texas? I think I remember those guys. They made a splash recently, right?
Yeah. No, they just moved to the U.S. And no, we were talking a lot. They were asking where to come to, and we recommended a few places. We always recommend startups to go to Bentonville, Arkansas, if we get the choice. But we also, I think they mentioned they're interested in Austin, so ended up there. Obviously an amazing startup hub, but we're a little bit biased about Bentonville, just given our large partnerships with Walmart and Tyson and J.B. Hunt, and that's kind of becoming an emerging market. But no, they're doing a lot of work now with their pods for electric autonomous trucks with GE appliances and Bridgestone and Oatly, for example. So really excited to see those guys expand. And I think it's just kind of the beginning of them in the United States.
Yeah. Anything, and it's always easier said than done with the what's hype, because it's just a timing thing. Anything that you're seeing in the supply chain innovation ecosystem that's it's just not commercially ready yet, but has a lot of promise?
Yeah, I've been saying that about blockchain for years. I think there's always a lot of promise in the blockchain space. The market, I think, still hasn't matured fully. Like you need kind of mass industry adoption. So I'd say that's something that we've looked at since I launched the program in 2017 with Maersk, for example, who had the TradeLens platform. And there's various other kind of blockchain initiatives that have gotten a decent amount of traction, but nothing's really taken off. So I think that's something that's been a lot of hype up and down over the years that I think long-term has a lot of opportunity, but still hasn't seen that commercial traction yet.
Yeah, I'd agree with you. I think there were some good efforts, you know, Walmart and Maersk in prior days with FreightWaves in the portfolio. I think we tried the Blockchain and Transportation Alliance and had every shipper, broker, carrier under the sun in the same room. but it's really gnarly when you talk standards and protocols just at the data level. You first have to get that set before you can ever hope for the data provenance that blockchain will hopefully get us to. So I'm with you. A lot of promise there, but still certainly some time ahead before I see that one really adopting. So Mike, maybe next question, where's the wisdom for the founders out there who are raising venture capital? We always love to bring it back to the founders at some point here. What gets you excited about these new early stage entrants, and any advice you could share with them? We always like to break it apart. Any keys to success as they're entering the conversation with you, and maybe some common challenges to avoid?
Yeah, I think for us as an investor, we'll operate and think like a lot of other VC firms. I think the most important thing for us is always the team. Like for example, when we invested in Rappi, which became the first unicorn in Colombia, they had a completely different business model, and they were able to pivot to building this new kind of last mile delivery model all across Latin America, and they've been growing like crazy ever since. But I think building kind of a rock star team is something that is extremely important as an early stage company, and what us and a lot of other early stage investors will look at as kind of the most critical thing. So it's good to have one, like if you're a very early stage company, if you're a genius and have a great idea, you can't just have that yourself. You have to build a team around you with people that complement you and that you're ready to do this in the long term with. So I think my advice to founders is that build an amazing team, and that 90% of the effort is going to be on execution. That even if you have a great idea, you have to spend the time and really build the business side of it and really scale the company. So I would say my advice to startups is, yeah, connect to a program like ours. There's other programs where you can get corporate traction. Our program, I think, is especially valuable for startups now that are a little bit more developed, like that are already found product market fit. But I would definitely recommend to these startups, if you want to raise venture capital, having a strong team in addition to the other things like having a good market, having a good technology, and all the other components are also very important too.
Right on. All great advice. Well, Mike, we always wrap up with a section we call quick hitters, a little bit of a rapid fire Q&A session. So if you're ready, we'll jump in.
Yeah, sounds good.
Okay, I think I may know the answer here, but what's the number one thing you're looking for when you're evaluating an early stage founder in this ecosystem?
Yeah, I think I said that in my last answer. I would say the number one thing is having a great team. And if they can kind of, collaborate and it's like a sports team. Like if you have a star point guard, for example, in basketball, you need to have a good kind of person on the wing, you need to have a good big man. So essentially like having a good team that complements each other, I think is extremely important. So that's the number one thing I think we'll evaluate. Does this entrepreneur have experience scaling a startup in the past or selling a company? That is a huge thing for us. If we can see an entrepreneur that's done it before, and there's a big difference, I think, between having like a strong corporate background and being an entrepreneur. I think they're different skill sets. Like it's good to have kind of those people as well. But to really build a startup, it's very tough and challenging. So building the right team within your company, I think, is extremely important. And then, yeah, connecting to a program like ours, you can always reach out to me and the Plug and Play team. We're happy to help any startup in supply chain and logistics. But even if you're in another sector as well, we can connect you to other programs as well, if you're hoping to connect to mentors or partners within the industry.
Right on. One resource could be book, podcast, blog, whatever you'd recommend our audience to follow in the ecosystem.
Yeah, I like to look at a lot of more general stuff when it comes to investing and startups being in Silicon Valley. But I think regarding the supply chain sector, one thing that I've recommended a lot of team members, especially people that are new to logistics and supply chain, are one of our partners at DHL makes these amazing trend reports. So if you want to just kind of read and kind of understand and look at different market trends, I think those have been really valuable and something that I've encouraged. I've read a bunch of them over the years, and I've also recommended them to a lot of folks, especially people that are kind of trying to understand the logistics market even more.
Yeah, we had Gina Chung from the DHL Innovation Center on, and she mentioned that trend mapper they put out. It's pure gold. Couldn't agree with you more on that one. Mike, one person who should be on the podcast.
Yeah, no, I've heard a lot of our partners here. Gina Chung, we've worked a lot with her as well, but also like Ryder, Prologis, I've seen them also on your podcast. One corporate partner maybe I'll recommend, although I could choose a bunch of them because we have a lot of them in this exact area, would be, I'd recommend Yuichi Ando. He's the head of Silicon Valley Innovation at Japan Post, and they're doing a lot of kind of big investments from Japan. They're one of the largest companies in Japan. They're doing a lot of kind of new activities around venture capital, and yeah, we get to spend a lot of time with him now in Silicon Valley. So I'd recommend him just because you get a different perspective on what they're doing, and he's becoming a leader, especially in the Japanese market.
Yeah, get that international perspective. That'd be a great one, a great suggestion. And finally, Mike, best way for folks to reach out to you after the podcast?
Yeah, the best way is on LinkedIn. You can message me anytime there or just shoot me an email at mike@pnptc.com.
Right on. Well, again, really appreciative of what Plug and Play overall, and including the supply chain program, have done for the ecosystem. You guys have really been a big part of building it, and I know I'm going to keep sending my portfolio company through your batches for sure. So, Mike, thanks for coming on and telling the story here.
Yeah, thanks a lot for having me, Ty.